Welcome to Season 4 of the Fight Science Podcast. I am your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are bringing our focus to one of the most exciting and emerging areas of nutrition science, gut health. We all have an understanding of how our genetics and lifestyle choices can determine our health. However, in recent years, much attention has been given to how the foods we eat, activity we do, and lives we lead can alter the bacteria in our gut, which can have a profound effect on both our physical and mental health. To help us explore this topic, I've invited some of the world's top researchers and practitioners in this space to help us better understand how to optimize our gut health. Today, our guest is Dr. Nirala Jacoby. Dr. Jacoby has 20 years clinical experience as a naturopathic doctor and specializes in functional digestive disorders. She is the medical director of the Biome Clinic as well as www.cybotest.com. Dr. Jacoby is considered one of Australia's leading experts in the treatment of small intestine bacterial overgrowth, otherwise known as SIBO, a common cause of irritable bowel syndrome. She frequently lectures nationally and internationally on this topic. In this episode, we discuss exactly what SIBO is, what are its symptoms, and how you treat it. We also have a great discussion about the carnivore diet and speak about the acid-base balance in the body in terms of the alkaline diet. This is a great discussion where many myths are busted. So let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. So season 4, we are running a gut health series. So we will be continuing that today. Now we've got a very special guest joining us today from the Biome Clinic. We've got Dr. Nirala Jacoby. Doctor, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure to be here.
Before we get started, let's talk about a bit of background about you. Can you tell us about yourself, what you do, and how you got into this field?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a naturopathic physician trained in the US. And in the US, we basically get naturopathic training, but also as a GP training. So we're bona fide primary care physicians when we are let loose on the public. And I practiced in Montana for about 7 years as a primary care physician, treating everything from heart disease to gut issues to whatever, and doing that with natural means. And then I came to Australia about 15 years ago, and so really been in practice for well over 2 decades now, and started to specialize in digestive dysfunction or functional digestive disorders, which are basically digestive disorders that don't have any sort of structural problem, like or really prominent disease process. So IBS, SIBO, food allergies, leaky gut, those kinds of terms that many of your listeners may have already heard. And, you know, about 10 years ago, I came across that, and I was sort of flabbergasted that as a naturopathic practitioner and physician, I had never heard of SIBO. And so really started to dive into this topic. And in this process, I have become a specialist in this area and now train practitioners and their patients about how to diagnose and treat SIBO.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something we will definitely dive into. As we were saying offline, one of the most prominent figures in the mixed martial arts world, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson, actually came out not too long ago that he suffered from SIBO and he had all these negative effects. It affected his performance, his training, and how he went about making weight. So let's spend a bit of time talking about that. Can you explain to us what SIBO is?
Sure. SIBO is, it's an acronym that stands for small intestine bacterial overgrowth. So if you think about your gut from mouth to anus, you have a lot of meters of guts in the middle there, right? You have your stomach, and right below your stomach is your small intestine that is really the main place of where you are breaking down your food with enzymes and bile and all that. And then that's transported to the large intestine, and then you poop it out. So the small intestine really is an area that has a huge surface area. If I always tell my patients, if I were to yank out your small intestine and spread it out, like, it has the surface area of a double tennis court. So the whole purpose of your small intestine is to absorb your nutrients. So imagine now a bacterial overgrowth in an area that's not meant to have very many bacteria. Your microbiome that you may have heard about from different sources is mainly located in your large intestine. And that's where food remnants are getting fermented and vitamins are getting extracted and all sorts of important things happen in through the microbiome where it is meant to be, in the large intestine. So SIBO is a situation where something has happened so that bacteria are allowed to overgrow. And typically the symptoms of SIBO are very synonymous with IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, because SIBO happens to be the main cause of IBS. So if you're a listener and you've been diagnosed with IBS and you have not heard of SIBO, this is really, really important news for you, because SIBO is very treatable. And typically with IBS, patients are told to learn to live with it. So that this is really the important point, is that something has caused your small intestine to be favorable to the overgrowth of bacteria. And typically that is caused by something like maybe you went to Bali, or you went to a salad bar, or you had a barbecue where the meat was undercooked and you got a case of food poisoning with particular bacteria. These bacteria are not the bacteria that cause SIBO, but the food poisoning bacteria basically damage a nervous system process called the migrating motor complex, which is a little section in the small intestine that aims to sweep all the bacteria out and towards the small intestine. And when that's damaged after a case of food poisoning, you can develop SIBO. So then normal bacteria that are normally found in the large intestine, in your colon, are then found in the small intestine. So that's the primary reason people get SIBO, but there are many others. So if you've had a case of food poisoning and you then never been well since, or you developed IBS maybe a few months later, then it's very likely that you actually have this bacterial overgrowth, but there are other causes.
What are the other causes, Dr. Jacoby, that would cause this? Is there any type of malabsorption that would cause this, or is it primary just that, like you said, something has happened and it's caused this favorable overgrowth in the small intestine?
Yeah, so the malabsorption is actually a result of SIBO. But when you look at, so I have like a pie chart that I explain to practitioners and to patients, that there are four main groups of causes. So the primary one is something disrupting this motility in the upper gut. So, you know, normally we have certain defenses against bacterial overgrowth. Otherwise, all of us would walk around with SIBO all the time, because the world is teeming with bacteria. Our food is teeming with bacteria, especially if you are a raw foodie, or, you know, like there's just bacteria everywhere. And we have certain defenses like stomach acid. So stomach acid is a really important first line of defense. It's a vat of acid that is supposed to kill all bacteria that basically come into contact with it. There's very few that survive this. H. pylori is one of them. That's a bacteria that can survive that, but others don't typically do that. So if you're low in stomach acid, which can happen with chronic stress and other situations that you just don't produce enough, then you can get a bacterial overgrowth. Or if bile is a problem, or any of the digestive juices, as I call them, they all are first line defense. And then the second line defense is the motility, which is the migrating motor complex, which really in essence is a cleansing wave that sweeps through the small intestine 90 minutes after you've eaten something. And that it ensures the remnants of food as well as bacteria to be cleared out. Another important area of causes is abdominal surgery. So if you had a hernia repair, or you had your gallbladder taken out, or you had your appendix taken out, or if you're a woman and you had a laparoscopy, or you had a hysterectomy, then those are all abdominal surgeries, and abdominal surgeries cause scar tissue, and scar tissue causes restrictions that can then sort of kink the garden hose, as I like to call it, which means that food doesn't really go through very well. And then it's just kind of like a bottleneck, and bacteria are allowed to remain as well. And then there are some medications that affect motility as well. So it really, in my practice, I really aim to find the underlying cause, because SIBO can be, like I said, it's very treatable, but it also has a high relapse rate. So it's important to understand what caused it to begin.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you go about diagnosing if you do have the SIBO? Can you Is it symptom-based diagnosis, or do you go into a physician like yourself and then do some tests, or how do you go about that?
Right, that's a great question, because a lot of practitioners still mistakenly treat based on symptoms. So if you think about the symptoms of SIBO, the main one I would say is bloating after meals. So if you're somebody who gets immediately bloated after meals or within 20 minutes or so, then and you have other IBS symptoms like alternating constipation, diarrhea, or just diarrhea, or having abdominal cramping, those types of really classic IBS symptoms, then already my level of suspicion would increase if you have a lot of bloating after meals. Then what happens is you can either order a breath. So it's diagnosed basically through a breath test. And a breath test can be ordered through an online breath testing service like what I have, SIBOtest.com. You can order this yourself. But ideally, you want to work with a practitioner who knows what they're doing. So, you know, typically it's ordered through a practitioner, and then you don't have to pay GST either if you have a practitioner that does this. And then what happens is you get a test kit. It's done at home. You kind of have a prep diet where you reduce a lot of the fermentable foods, and then an overnight fast. And then in the morning, you do a breath sample, like every 20 minutes for 3 hours, you have this little vacutainer breath sample. And we are looking for the presence of hydrogen gas and methane gas, both of which are not made by humans. They're made by bacteria and other organism like archaea. So then what we can see is, because it's a timed event, we can pretty much tell whether or not it's in the small or large intestine. So that's the diagnosis of SIBO.
Excellent. And say someone does order this test and they do the breath test, they send it back to you, Dr. Jacoby, and you say, okay, well, yes, you do have SIBO. What's the next steps after that?
Right. Then you either work with a practitioner who's well-trained in SIBO, and you can find a SIBO-trained practitioner that we've trained through our education platform. And if you go to SIBOtest.com and find a practitioner, they're all trained practitioners and they know what to do. But typically, what your choices are then is either antibiotics, but really specific antibiotics that don't tend to harm the good microbiome very much. So that's rifaximin and neomycin, or just rifaximin. Or you do herbal antimicrobials, or you do something called the elemental diet. And the elemental diet is a total meal replacement of a very absorbable, like a protein powder, not like whey or pea or any of these are free form amino acids. And they are absorbed before bacteria can get to them. So it's in essence, for 2 to 3 weeks, you're starving the bacteria. And all three are really good choices. And then after a period of time, I should add to this that if you opt for herbal antimicrobials, you can also go on a low FODMAP diet or the biphasic diet that I've created that you can get for free on the SIBOdoctor.com. There's a lot of free resources there if you feel like you want to learn more. And so it's really a process. And then afterwards, if you were determined to have SIBO that was caused by a motility disorder, you're likely to be placed on something called a prokinetic, which is something that aims to reset the normal motility of the upper gut. And that prevents relapse from occurring. So that's it in a very, very tiny nutshell. Of course, there's a lot more to it, but just as an overview, I think that will suffice.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we dive into a couple of them? The elemental diet, can we dive into that a bit, Dr. Jacoby? And can you kind of talk to us about what that looks like?
So the elemental diet is actually for people that have really, really inflamed diet. Like, it was originally actually formulated for people that had really inflamed digestive tracts, like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, that type of thing, and people that had severe malabsorption, really. So it is a formula that there's only a few companies that make this, because it's really difficult to source free-form amino acids that are actually palatable, because the biggest concern there is, if you've ever tasted a combination of free-form amino acids, they're absolutely foul, and you just want to vomit the minute you smell it. So this is the big thing, to get a formula of free-form amino acids, glucose, which is the primary fuel for the brain, as we know, and also fatty acids. So this is a formula that is based on each individual's caloric needs. You have different levels of servings per day, and you that's all you do for about 2 to 3 weeks. And I mean, you could take about 6 to 8 servings a day. And really the idea here is it's so rapidly absorbed in the upper part of the gut that downstream bacteria will not have any fuel source. And, you know, when I first heard about it, I was like, surely this can't be as effective as antimicrobials, but you'd be surprised. It's actually really, really effective for treating SIBO.
And on the other flip side of that, what's probably, if someone did have SIBO, what would be the most unfavorable foods that they could be eating that would be feeding that bacteria?
Those foods are what are called FODMAP foods, right? So FODMAP stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. So these are all fibers and fermentable substances that bacteria love. And let's not forget that FODMAPs, if you don't have SIBO, are great for you. They're great for your microbiome. You need to feed your microbiome. You need to eat some fibers and starches and things like that, just because your microbiome thrives on those kinds of foods. That's why I'm totally against the carnivore diet, because it really is a microbiome-starving diet. Are things like garlic, onions, you know, a lot of vegetables, some grains. And so, you know, if you felt like, since you've reduced your grains and a lot of the vegetables, you feel better, that might actually be due to the fact that you have some problem with SIBO rather than your metabolism runs better on an all meat diet, for example. It's typically related to some extent to the microbiome that gives you those types of symptoms.
Hey guys, I just quickly want to give a shout out to the team over at Macro Mike. Only because snacking is my favorite thing to do in this life, and Macro Mike has changed the game when it comes to healthy snacks. What they do is use clean and healthy plant-based ingredients, and they make healthy versions of all of those things that you thought you weren't supposed to eat. They make peanut butter and mixes for cookies, brownies, and donuts that you can whip up in literally minutes. And best of all, these are all completely clean and taste beyond phenomenal. They also make protein supplements, protein bars, plant-based aminos, and a great product for your gut health called the Gut Doctor. The flavors that these guys have are seriously insane. Some of my favorites are chocolate hazelnut, Hawaiian salted vanilla, and strawberry jam donut. For a self-confessed snacker, these are a lifesaver. They've been nice enough to give my listeners 10% with the code TFD10, so you guys can try them for yourself. Alrighty, back to the show.
I'd love to touch on that a bit more, Dr. Jacoby, because the carnivore diet, especially in the world that I live and work in the MMA world and the combat sports world, is quite popular, and there's a few big figures that really push it. Can you kind of elaborate on those points and explain
right.
why
and look, it might be good for short term? You know, there's no proof that for short term, meaning a few weeks, that there is long-term damage to the microbiome. But let me just kind of come back and sort of do my little spiel about microbiome, because it's this incredible symbiotic relationship that we have with bacteria that line our digestive tract. And, you know, when you think about the effects of the microbiome on the human body, it's just mind-blowing. Everything from mood to weight management to energy to like just everything that you can think of is related to what these bacteria do and don't do for us. And it's really when you look at evolution and where we are now after the Industrial Revolution and the onset of antibiotics and our processed food supply, we've absolutely decimated this incredible organ that does so much for us. And we think of the microbiome as an organ, right? Because it is so metabolically active. So what happens is those bacteria need to eat something, right? So you have sort of a balance of the main groups of bacteria, and those, some of them prefer fibers. A lot of them prefer fibers. Some really thrive on bile and fat and animal proteins, but those are the bacteria that in research you don't really want to favor, because they then increase their production of hydrogen sulfide, and they increase inflammation and the absorption of what's called LPS, which is a really, really inflammatory substance in gram-negative bacteria. So we know, even from short-term studies, that there can be this massive increase in these metabolites from these unfavorable bacteria if your only food source is meat, right? So, and if you think about, you know, then if I kind of veer off to what is the most healthy diet? Well, I don't think that one, the most healthy diet exists, because when you look at evolution and how humans have populated the planet, you needed different microbiomes to fulfill different functions. So the Inuit or the Native Americans in formerly called Eskimos, but in Northern North America, they had a very different diet than people in sub-Saharan Africa, right? So you needed different microbiomes to extract calories and to really provide nutrients for you. That's what you have to think about, is what is this microbiome really doing for me? And I really think that the most proof we have of a healthy diet comes from, I don't know if you've ever heard of The Blue Zone, but Dan Buettner, it's a book called The Blue Zones. And the Blue Zones are places on the planet where people routinely live to be over 100 years old. And they're very cognitively still there. They're very, very switched on still. They participate in their communities. They are still physically active. And that to me is proof that somebody's doing something right, is that they live to be 100 and they're still totally with it, right? And all what they all had in common, these blue zones, is that they had a plant-based diet, or an 80% plant-based diet. There were variations from location to location, but that was what they all shared, besides being still really involved in community and having meaningful relationships. Of course, those are all different markers as well, but that to me was the most convincing argument that we have evolved with plants, and we are meant to eat plants in all shapes and forms. So, you know, that to me is what I always tell my patients, because when they are convinced they have to try one diet or another, it's like, you know, first it was Atkins, then it's paleo, and then it's carnivore, and it just goes on and on. But we do have research on all meat diets also being quite detrimental in terms of shortening telomeres and things like that, which is associated with loss of length of lifespan. So you will die sooner, you know. Anyways, I don't know how much more I should say about this, but it is a really, for me as a practitioner and a physician, it's really important to not go to the extremes of dieting, you know. So and because I'm in love with the microbiome and everything around it, I want to be sort of like the custodian of the microbiome for my patients. And that means really promoting foods that are great for the microbiome. And what are those foods? So like once SIBO is treated, right, we then kind of move into what we call microbiome restoration, because all of us have had assaults on our microbiome, whether that's antibiotics or, you know, the other disturbing trend with the carnivore diet is like, unless it's organic, you're getting a lot of antibiotics through your animal proteins, because the animal or the meat industry and the dairy industry, they have to use antibiotics to fatten the animals. That's what actually causes a lot of weight gain in animals, is adding antibiotics to animal feeds. So, you know, there is a lot more to talk about there, but a good diet will have a variety of vegetables. I'd say 6 to 8 cups of vegetables a day is really what I strive for almost every day. And that way you don't just get the microbiome promoting fibers, but you also get what are called polyphenols. And polyphenols are the chemical messengers that are in colored vegetables. And they do just an incredible amount of health promoting actions for us in our bodies.
Excellent. That's a great summary. Hey, Dr. Jacoby, let's just run with this train of thought. And I think it doesn't have to be specific with the carnivore, but say if someone's not eating that type of diet and they're not eating a predominantly plant-based diet and they may not necessarily have SIBO, are there other symptoms or other things that will be going on in their body that may be, you know, clues that, okay, maybe my microbiome isn't as optimal at what it could be?
Great question. So yes, for example, if like I would start thinking about the microbiome if you have things like a lot of allergies and a lot of hives. If you have stubborn weight that's not going away and you're training your butt off and you're starving yourself and it's still not coming off, microbiome. If you've had a lot of antibiotics in maybe in childhood for ear infections, or if you're a woman, you had a lot of bladder infections and you've had a lot of antibiotics for all these different things, that in itself means that your microbiome is very likely has been affected. And if you have also things like mood, if you have any sort of mood disorder is linked to the microbiome through the gut-brain axis. So, you know, it's like I said, every chronic illness, as well as pretty much everything, can be related to microbiome dysfunction. So if you've looked at some of those issues and have not found answers, you might want to investigate the microbiome.
Absolutely. I want to come back to a point that you mentioned a bit earlier about the stomach acid and its role in digestion. Often we talk about, I know, especially in the world I live in, there's a lot of talk about, you know, alkaline diets and things like that. I know there's research that's coming out talking about the microbiome and if there's a favorable pH for microbiota to live in. Can you give us some insight into that and kind of talk more about the role of acids and bases within the body for digestion? And is there some truth to the alkaline diet in terms of our microbiome?
Well, the alkaline diet is a plant-based diet. If you think about the most extreme of acidity, it will be the carnivore diet, because we know that animal products are acidic in nature. It just is that way, right? And even when we were hunters and gatherers, what we know is we ate far more vegetables that had far more potassium, which is a very alkaline mineral, and it balanced things out. So if you like your animal protein, no problem. Just make sure that you really counter that with masses of vegetables, and then you have an alkaline diet. But let's kind of talk about pH balances. So, you know, your stomach is supposed to be the acidity of car battery acid, right? Which is in and of itself mind-boggling that you have a vat of acid and you don't digest your own stomach, right? Just think about that for a moment. You have a fleshy pouch of acid, but that acid is supposed to be about 0.5 to about 2 at a resting state. That's extremely acid. If I stick my finger in your stomach, it should get digested down to the bone, right? Then you have buffering agents that come from the pancreas called bicarbonate. They're released in response to acid as the food comes through. Then you have acid, then base, then that food hits the large intestine and you get acid again, because now your bacteria are making what are called short chain fatty acids, which are these metabolic byproducts that are incredibly important for our brain, our health, our energy. Then it starts to get alkaline again as things are buffered. So you have these alternating through your digestive tract, these places, so that you can't say that there is a perfect place for, or what's the perfect pH. The perfect pH in the bowel, large intestine, is about 6, so quite alkaline. And if it gets too acidic, then you have more E. coli growing, you have all these other things growing, you have more blastocystis growing, you have tons of other things that can happen if you become too acidic. Again, back to the carnivore diet. I'm not trying to pick on that, but I'm just saying I would pick on any extreme diet. You know, that's just me. I'm not an extreme athlete by any stretch of the imagination. So I focus on general health promoting practices for my patients. You do have to have proper acids and then buffering capacity. And so, you know, when we talk about tissue acidity, then that's a whole different story, because that's different from digestive pH changes. But we know that people that generally consume a very acidic diet over time will acidify their tissues. And what does that mean? It means that you become more inflamed and you can't detoxify properly. So, and basically that's based on, looking at the extracellular matrix and looking at blood levels of your, like tons of things to look at in terms of blood tests as to what constitutes an acidic environment. But that is something I do look at when people have chronic inflammatory situations or they really can't overcome their condition, systemic condition, and a lot of fatigue, a lot of joint pain comes with being too acidic. So yeah, a lot of different aspects to investigating what exact symptoms might be attributed to their state.
So in theory, the foods that you eat based on, you know, the composition of them in terms of these alkaline and acidic properties such as potassium and sodium and everything else, that could have an effect in how you digest the food, which could have an effect in how healthy your microbiome is. Is that correct?
So, the acidity of the food does not determine the acidity of your stomach, right? So you have this very controlled environment in your stomach that'll just basically try to break down everything regardless of content, right? Although hydrochloric acid really is the main digestive force to break down protein. So it starts to unravel these long strands of peptides so that then pepsinogen and other enzymes can start to break that down into dipeptides and then eventually amino acids. So the diet itself does not determine how acid your stomach is. Although long-term vegans tend to have lower stomach acid output because they don't need that much acid power, right? So the body sort of adjusts. But you can't, like the point about how acidic your diet is, it then adds to your total acid load in your body that then determines how inflamed you are in general, not just in your digestive tract.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely fascinating. Now, I'm being very mindful of time, Dr. Jacoby. So I want to almost finish this up and get your opinions and your thoughts. If you were to give some tips or advice and someone came to you and said, how would I best look after my microbiome in a sweeping kind of generalization, what would be your top tips that you would give people?
So, you know, if you weren't that interested to look at it from just actually assessing it with a stool test and looking at what your microbiome looks like and then being really targeted with how you regrow that, if you just say, all right, I just want to improve my microbiome, is eating a plant-based diet. There's undoubtedly, now there's a carbotarian diet, which is just starches and processed foods. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the 8 cups of fresh vegetables a day, which is actually not that difficult. If you, like fruit also, but fruit in more moderation, but anything that comes from the plant world is helpful for your microbiome. In particular, there are some really heavy hitters when it comes to polyphenolic content, which would be things like any kind of, you know, blueberry. You all are probably doing blueberry smoothies, but anything that's colorful all the way through. So like a purple carrot, green tea is just a powerhouse of polyphenols and really great for your microbiome. And then certain prebiotics that we often use. And prebiotics are foods that feed your good bacteria. Besides what we find in, well, they're also found in foods, but there are particular ones like inulin, like galacto-oligosaccharides, fructo-oligosaccharides, and all those are wonderful. But even before you buy something like that, you could work with resistant starches, which are starches that arrive in the colon and really feed the bacteria there. And that would be like green banana flour, boiled and cooled rice or potatoes. So you cook them and then cool them for a minimum of 6 hours. And that what happens there is those long strands of amylopectin, which is the starch, has been broken down into smaller digestible pieces and then reconstitute it. And when that arrives, they just kind of go crazy, the bacteria. So they really love that. But it's, I think the versatility of your diet would be another another recommendation, just to be, have variety and not always eat the same blueberry smoothie in the morning and just kind of store-bought salad. You know, that's not much of a nutrient-dense vegetable, but to really explore and don't be afraid to try some vegan dishes or just expand your horizons when it comes to other protein sources, for example, that, that like plant-based protein sources like lentils and beans are, I mean, they are just unbelievable fibers for your microbiome, you know? So I think that's, those probably would be my first recommendations. Although a lot of people say, I can't eat lentils, I can't eat beans. Well, you haven't eaten them in a long time. That's probably why you can't digest them. And you have to work up, you know, your tolerance. So start with a tablespoon of a tinned lentil and then work up from there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's phenomenal information. Earlier, Dr. Jacoby, you said on your website, you give away a lot of this great information for free. Say if people are listening to this episode and they say, hey, I need to learn a lot more about SIBO, or I need to just learn more about the microbiome from Dr. Jacoby in much more depth. What's the best way for them to say, follow you on your socials or go to your website and learn that? Or even if they're a practitioner, how to get involved with your course?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So I have an educational website called thesibodoctor.com. And it's really a platform to educate patients about SIBO and also practitioners to get the training to be a SIBO doctor approved practitioner. And we have a lot of courses. One of them is microbiome restoration, which can be, you know, it's mainly for practitioners, but it can also be used for patients. But I'm in the process of creating a new course for patients exactly on this topic, on microbiome restorations and how to actually achieve that. So that's coming. But the socials, I am dr.nirala.jacoby on Instagram. And I do a lot of education there and frequent posts. And then I'm also on Facebook under the SIBO Doctor. So you can go there. And I mean, the information is mainly geared towards SIBO, but I talk a lot about functional digestive disorder. Just now I did a Facebook Live on nickel allergy and chronic gut inflammation. So it's a really a huge amount of variety that I try to serve up to my fans.
Yeah. And just lastly, if someone wanted to drop by the Biome Clinic and come see you and your team, whereabouts are you guys located for that?
Well, you know, we're still not seeing patients live because of COVID, right? So I don't know when this interview airs. Hopefully by then the restrictions are fully lifted and we are pretty busy. So the best thing to do is to go to the Biome Clinic. So that's B-I-O-M-E clinic.com and just look around and follow the leads there or go to reception at thebiomeclinic.com to request an appointment. We have a functional nutritionist as well as other practitioners. And so we really gut centered here. And we, so it's not just, we don't just do naturopathy. We do a lot of other things.
Absolutely amazing. Well, Dr. Jacoby, thanks so much for coming on. That was some great information. I definitely got a lot out of it. I'm sure everyone at home will get a lot out of it. I'm going to make the most of those free resources. Absolutely. I think I might annoy you a bit too much in the coming months. You've piqued my interest now.
No problem. No, well, I mean, I should say thank you. I mean, the free resources are SIBO oriented, you know, like the biphasic diet. If you have IBS symptoms, you can definitely try that out, just the diet alone and see if you improve and then work with a practitioner. Sorry, I interrupted your goodbyes, but I wanted to clarify that.
No, that's absolutely fine. Well, we'll leave it at that. So thanks so much for coming on, Dr. Jacoby, and I'll be in touch very soon.
Thanks, Jordan. Take care.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Dr. Jacoby is one of the leading experts in SIBO, and it's not difficult to see why. She has a refreshingly open-minded approach to treatment, and her patients are reaping the benefits. Be sure to follow her on socials to stay informed about her work. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.